Just as a warning for any listeners, this will be a very in-depth Mass Effect podcast, covering all three games. There will most likely be quite a few spoilers in here for the overall story, for character-specific storylines, deaths, events, all kinds of stuff. So if you haven't played through it, or if you don't want to listen to spoilers for it, then you should probably stop listening right about now.
I think that's the end of the non-spoiler portion of the
Yeah, most likely. That actually reminds me, I need to remember what episode number we're on. All right, cool. Got it. Well, then I'll go ahead and throw this in now. This is episode 20 of Marooner's Talk, the not Mass Effect episode, just because I like to mix it up a little bit, I guess.
Oh, man. I have now been in 20% of the Marooners Talk podcasts. It's funny how that works out.
This is celebratory all around.
I know, right? It's like that 200th episode of Stargate or something, you know?
Nice. Cool. So, Mass Effect 3 came out on Tuesday.
Yes, it very much did.
And that's been a time killer for a lot of people.
It took me roughly from the time it was released in Chicago until I got it actually installed and playable about an hour, and then I played for about 3.5 hours, and that was like 4:30 in the morning, and I was like, I should probably sleep for a few hours.
Yeah, I did about the same thing. I think I was up till 4 or 5 after I played it. It's addicting.
It is. It's very solid. The gameplay mechanics are further refined from Mass Effect 2, which were further refined from Mass Effect 1. They added an extra level of depth that wasn't there in Mass Effect 2. So it's not quite level or Mass Effect 1 character progression in terms of like stat allocation stuff. It's not quite there, but it's as close as we're gonna get in still making a user-friendly system.
Well, I played Mass Effect 1 back in 2010, up until the point where I became a Spectre. And I hated it. I really hated it. I didn't like the inventory system. I didn't like the map. I didn't like moving around. I didn't like any of it. I didn't like the grainy look to the graphics. But then I started playing it again. What is it? Today's Sunday. So last week, I guess. Or the week before last now. Because, I wanted to get through 2 after watching Lindsay play it. It looked a lot better, and then I wanted to get through 3. So I decided to start from the beginning and found myself really enjoying it.
Is this where I can pop in and I told you so?
Yes.
It took me 2 times too. I think the first time I picked it up, I just quit probably 4 or 5 hours in. It was really frustrating and kind of confusing. And it's a game that wasn't user friendly in any possible way.
No,
And
but
then
I mean, it really wasn't. But at the same time, like when I first saw it, because I've been waiting for a really good sci-fi space epic to come out, and damn it, they delivered.
That's true. Yeah, and the
Yes.
story was great. And when I got the second time through, the story really carried me through the entire experience. It wasn't about the actual gameplay or shooting things, because that kind of sucked, but it was
Yeah,
such a
it was pretty
fun
bad.
story.
See,
And
and
it's
I
just
actually liked the shooter elements. I liked that I didn't have to find ammo all the time. I liked that,
That's true.
most of
Yeah,
all, I
it was
loved
pretty
the way
cool
the
system.
inventory system worked. Now that I've played through it again, and now
Oh,
that
God,
I'm
it's
playing through 2, I love how one's inventory worked. It wasn't great for comparing stats. That was a little wonky. But the ability to put in the armor mods and the weapon mods and to be able to hot swap them and to be able to have full control over what every party member had, I miss that now in 2 because I'd have. Go ahead.
they brought that back in 3.
Yeah, to an extent, at least with weapon mods, but it's more realistic. Like you can't swap them on the fly because seriously, in the middle of a firefight, you're not going to be able to like up. Oh, I need to change out my rifle stock for better accuracy, you know. But you have weapon benches and stuff like that, and if you can find a weapon bench, you can adjust your shit.
Yeah, I saw Lindsay playing through it, and I saw that that's how
Sorry,
that
man.
was working.
Yeah, and you can pick your party mates' weapons and stuff like that when you swap out yours. So, they did a pretty good job of bringing back in some of those smaller RPG elements. But this game doesn't feel like they're even trying to be an action RPG. It feels like, hey, this is a completion of the story. This is fan service. This is the culmination of the choices you made, not necessarily the gameplay being the most important part. I think the choices and what happens is the most important part for this
True.
One.
But the gameplay was still really solid. And the AI was obviously a lot better this time around. Aside from like a couple bugs where you'll run into where they'll just like kind of just like hang out or something, like blinded by their own smoke grenade, but you've already flanked behind them, and you know. And I gotta say, the mail slot achievement was just addicting as hell.
Yeah.
Because they're the guardians, the guys with the shields, and there's an achievement called mail slot for killing 10 of them through the hole in their shield. And it's just like a friend of mine, one of the writers for the game, actually, I talked to her on Twitter all the time, mentioned something about it, and I was like, man, now I want to go for that achievement. And I'm sitting there like burning all of my powers to slow down time and increase accuracy to be able to shoot through that damn hole.
Hmm. Yeah, I've burned through almost every achievement now except for Insanity and Hijacking an Atlas. So,
oh, the Hijacking an Atlas one is so easy to do because there's that one on that mission where you get Jack.
Yeah, it's just sitting Jack. There. It's you just, kill just the engineer in. Standing there and you jump into it, and that's it.
That doesn't give you the achievement for it, though.
Does on PC?
Really? Yeah.
I've played through it twice now, that level, and I didn't get the achievement either time.
Yeah, Lindsay played it on 360, got it as soon as she jumped into that Atlas mech.
Well, that really...
Let me open up Origin here and see if there's an easy way to look at my achievements.
Oh, I checked. I don't have the achievement. Well, I was looking at it. No, I don't know what happened.
Huh. Okay, I think you have to actually shoot one through the glass and take out the person in it and then jump into it, which is why it's difficult to sniper that out. But...
Damn achievements in Origin. Why does this service suck? So much.
Adam thinks you have to actually snipe through the shield of the windshield of one, and then take it over after you kill the operator.
Really?
Oh, I'm gonna have to go into
no,
the game.
No, I thought because I remember when I looked through the achievements before I started the game, and I saw the one for the Atlas mech, and then when I got to that part where
I was able to get in the mech.
And so then when I was going through the achievements, I think it was yesterday, and I saw it in there, and I saw that I didn't have it yet, and I was like, I don't know what to do.
I could have sworn I saw it pop up.
Yeah.
Dude. Oh, well. Either way, yeah. Atlas mechs were at the E3 demo last year. It looked very imposing, and I was not looking forward to fighting one. And then I fought one, and I was like, well, that was just way too easy.
They did do a lot of great variations with the enemies, though. There's so many more varieties and different strategies for each one, and I really love what they did with that aspect of it.
There
Mixed
were,
combat
but,
much more.
But I found myself missing Scions, Abominations, and Praetorians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought, like, Scions, I thought were a great enemy type in 2, and it totally would have made sense to have them come back. I mean, I understand that cannibals were kind of, like, their replacement, but they were, like, a shitty replacement. And then Praetorians were, you know, like, you saw one of those things hit the battlefield, and you just kind of, like, crapped your pants. You're like, oh, man, where's my heavy weapon? Oh, I don't have enough ammo for this. It's going to be really hard.
Well, that's how I feel with the Banshee enemies.
God, I hate those.
Yeah, yeah. The reason I love them, though, is because they're all based off of different alien types. So, you know, when you go to the Taurian planet, oh, here's what the Taurians are being turned into. And, hey, we're on the Asari planet. This is what the Asari are being turned into. And each of those enemies plays off that race's strength.
Yeah, I'm very glad that I waited to do the Asari stuff until, like, as late as you possibly can. Because I imagine that enemies populate depending on what Reaper enemies you have unlocked, and I don't want Banshees any earlier in that game than they have to be.
Yeah,
I've only seen Banshees during her during Lindsay's multiplayer playthroughs, and they look pretty damn tough.
They are. A buddy of mine was playing Infiltrator headshot spec'd, and he had like the Widow. Sniper rifle, which is like the most powerful sniper rifle in the game with all of the damage mods and all that stuff, and he could one shot just about everything in the game except for a Banshee. And it's just like, you know, there comes a time towards the end where right before you take down that Reaper, and there's like four of them on the battlefield, and I'm just like, no, please God, just why are there four of these things?
Yeah, and they, you know, they'd knock your shield down immediately, and I'm playing on Insanity now, and good God, I'm not looking forward to hitting them. They really upped Insanity mode in this version. In Mass Effect 2, it's based off of your level, so if you try to play Insanity on your second playthrough, the enemies are damn near impossible. But if you start a brand new game, it's actually not that difficult, because the enemies start out lower, which was a nice trick. And this one, it's just insane. The same level on both, whether you play with a new character or an older one. And it's kicking my ass. Like, I mean, the very first probably hour, I was getting my ass kicked by Cerberus troops. It's real rough. So,
yeah. Damn,
those Cerberus guys are douchebags too. I mean, that smoke grenade that Centurions have, I hate that thing.
Yeah, they're definitely the roughest that I've run across. The Reapers aren't so bad. But the whole Cerberus plotline is very bizarre as well, and kind of abrupt.
It does end very abruptly, but I think that it was especially that second to last mission at Sanctuary, where you have all those audio and video logs that you can go through. Like, I think that does a really good job of summing it up and why Cerberus is all kind of retarded.
I just think it was strange the way that the game continues, because it's based pretty heavily off of playing the Arrival DLC, which I thought was a little bit shady. I played Arrival, and I barely remembered what happened in it. So when I started up 3, it seemed very, very quick. And the people that I know that didn't play through Arrival were just completely lost. And I think that really does a disservice to your players if you're taking away a big chunk of the story from them.
Yeah, well, it is interesting, too, because my first playthrough, I used a different save file than the one I'm using for my second right now. And in my first one, I didn't do any of the DLC.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, I did Lair of the Shadow Broker, and that was it. Or not Lair of the Shadow Broker, Stolen Memories. And that was it. So it was like when Kasumi showed up, it made sense. It's like, oh, hey, what's up, Kasumi? How you doing? But then, you know, talking to Liara, it's like they kind of sum it all up. And so it's just, she's like, oh, when I took back, or I became the Shadow Broker, took the ship, and my friend Farron died. And that really sucked. And I was like, oh, that sucks. But then when you go through another time, you know, she's like, oh, and Farron's out being an information gatherer, and I owe you big time for helping me defeat the Shadow Broker.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So that was a question that I had going into it, was would Mass Effect 3 assume that all of the DLC for 2 was done, even if you don't do it? And it sounds like it does.
The only one that it assumes really was done by the player is really the Arrival. But it doesn't actually say anything about it unless you've actually done it.
Mm.
Because, like, that opening bit that's in the demo where you're talking with Anderson on your way to go meet with the council, or the human council.
Right.
He's all, like, usually he's just like, oh, the shit you did, you're lucky you haven't been court-martialed and all this. And then, but when he says that, when you go in with the safe file where you did the Arrival, he actually goes in and he's like, dude, you destroyed an entire system and killed hundreds of thousands of Batarians. And I was all like, who cares, the Batarians? You know, but... nobody likes and Batarians.
The thing is that really
I think
plays...
that's because they're all dicks. I mean, they both look like dicks and they act like dicks in every Batarian I've seen so far.
It's important because if you didn't play with Arrival, I've got two characters. I've got a male Shepherd and a female Shepherd. And I played the Arrival DLC with my male Shepherd. And I played through my first playthrough of 3 with my Fem Shep. And they mention all the things you did in Arrival, and I completely forgot what I'd done. And it just assumed that you'd done it. And I was like, what the hell are they talking about? When did the Batarians die? What's going on? And going through my male Shepherd, they recap the Arrival DLC at the beginning. And I was like, oh, right, of course. So I thought that was kind of strange that they would do the recap if you played the DLC, but they wouldn't recap it if you didn't.
Well, they really should have recapped it either way. Especially because, I mean, if you think about it, like, the whole, like, point of the Arrival DLC was that you had to destroy that mass relay or else the Reaper War would have started 6 months prior to the events of Mass Effect 3.
Right.
You know, And thinking about that, they'll touch on something whenever we get around to the ending of Mass Effect 3, where I feel that everything's kind of okay. But, you know, so 6 months, the Reapers get into that system, no mass relay anymore, and most of Batarian space. And it takes them 6 months at normal FTL speeds to indoctrinate the vast majority of the Batarian populace and then get to another mass relay so they can get to the rest of the galaxy. So, you know, and then, of course, what's everyone else do? They dick around and go, oh, the Reapers aren't real. Shepard's lying. He's a jerk. Or she's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then sure enough, Reapers show up on Earth, and Keith David does his whole awesome tutorial section because Keith David is awesome.
I don't know where I was going with that. Well, there's a couple things. I think that kind of does a disservice to anyone that didn't want to pay $10 to do DLC, which I don't think you should ever punish players for not playing DLC.
Yeah.
And for Xbox players, I don't know if Lindsay ran into this, but there's the issue with them not being able to import faces from Mass Effect 1.
Well, she never played Mass Effect 1, so she wouldn't have run into that, but I did hear that issue. Yeah.
That was, I think, a big issue for, I mean, for me, definitely, and for other people that I know that have played through the game. Because they're kind of saying, hey, we're going to give you the reward to culminate this big six-year project we've been doing. This is one of the most ambitious video game projects, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything is based on your character's decisions, but you can't play the same character in the third game. Like, that seems like such a gigantic misstep, like kind of a fuck you to players that are playing on the 360. And the facial creation tools are different, so you can't even create your Shepard again.
Well, that's probably why you can't do it, because they change things. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it sucks, yeah, don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's just those old faces won't work with the current system.
And I think that that is a complete disservice. They needed to figure that out earlier, obviously, and do something about it, because I want to play my Shepard.
You spent the time building your Shepard in the first one, designing the way that he or she looked, and you would think that they would follow through all the way until the end. And, you know, I thought it was cool at the beginning of 2 how you were able essentially to redesign and they fit it into the story because, well, you know, maybe while you're being rebuilt, you had to take some changes to your appearance and to your gameplay style and all that. But
we had to lower your cheekbones a little bit there, Shepard. And
yeah, it seemed like such a just a kind of a kick in the pants. And then you have the stuff with the Arrival DLC that I think cheats part of the story, so I feel like it should have been a better experience than it was for me, especially as much as I've invested in these games over the last few years. I mean, I've bought Mass Effect 2 on both consoles, played through it numerous times on both systems. I bought 2 copies of 3 so I could play through all of my Shepherds, and to kind of give me the middle finger that I didn't want to play the DLC on the Xbox and the PS3, it's kind of unfair, I feel.
Yeah, if they're gonna treat it as canon in 3, if they're gonna treat 2's DLC as canon in 3, then at least a recap of the events or something for those who didn't play it would have been nice.
Yeah. I can definitely see where you're coming from on this, Adam, and part of me definitely agrees with you, but at the same time, that information is there in the game if you go looking for it.
Kind of, but the thing, like, the way that it's available is there's a Batarian you run into who joins Cerberus to help try to betray humankind because he's pissed at Shepard for killing the Batarians. He went through that story, like, oh, everyone's dead, the mass relay was destroyed, and they never mentioned that, oh, yeah, it's your fault for doing it. And I had just kind of forgotten that because the Arrival DLC was something I played the day it came out and never picked up again. I don't know. I don't think it was as clear as it could have been. And if somebody doesn't really go looking for that, they'll never know. They'll never understand.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. But at the same time, that particular Batarian, he stands out like a sore thumb. And it's almost to the point that it looks like he's actually a part of the natural progression of the game.
Yeah, but if you don't take that side quest, I mean, I don't know. I, of course, did every single mission that came up on my HUD. I just ran and did everything as quick as possible. Some people might not have done that quest.
Yeah. Either way, it could have been better.
Yeah. That's my thing, is they should make it easy on you. If you're going to kind of ask someone to pay $10, that's a luxury. if you're not going to package in the game, DLC shouldn't be required. I'm already paying $60 for the game. Don't require me to spend another $10 to get the full experience of this six-year event that I've been playing.
At least put out, like, I would like to see, especially for the Xbox, a boxed set, a Mass Effect 1 and 2, all DLCs, put it out for, like, a $60 price tag for new people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that way you could have, you know, something like essentially about 80 hours of entertainment for a single 1-2 playthrough with all the DLC already bundled in, like a Game of the Decade edition.
Well, what bothers me is that, and I don't know if we talked about this last week or if I was talking, no, I was talking to someone else about it, is that the PS3 version of 2 comes with everything but the Arrival DLC packed in.
Yeah.
But the 360 doesn't come with any of it. Okay. And it's like, in order to get all of that, I have to pay an extra $30 now in DLC to catch up on Mass Effect 2. So that's going to turn...
Even then, you're still only paying $50 for everything, which is still... you know, $40 cheaper than you would have if you had purchased it at the original sticker price plus all the DLC.
And to be fair, I only paid $5 for Mass Effect 2 because I used a coupon Best Buy, so...
Word. Dude, those Best Buy coupons are great.
Oh, you know, you pay $15 a year for that magazine subscription, and we have saved, hell, I don't know, 70, 80, 100 bucks.
I pay $15 for that magazine subscription from GameStop, and that apparently gets me VIP status.
Yep.
So I didn't have to, like, I was, you know, like the fifth person in line to pick up my copy of Mass Effect 3. That was pretty great. But no, going off the DLC topic, one of the things that I am interested in moving forward with Mass Effect 3 is, where the hell is DLC going to fit in this game?
It can't. It really can't. Like, I think what they're going to do, and I mean, Tom, you've beaten the game, so you get that if you stay past the credits. So obviously, if you beat the game, you need to stay past the credits. They kind of have a recap.
Nobody's listening at this point because they don't want spoilers.
Yeah, well, good point. But okay, so at the end, you know, you have obviously a grandfather and a little kid looking out over a giant planet and talking about the Shepherd and how the Shepherd saved the universe, okay?
I think the old man is Joker, just saying.
See, and I wonder if it's that far in the future or if it's farther. I wasn't sure.
I seriously just think it's Joker.
Okay, all right.
That's just my thing. I mean, he's listed in the credits as Stargazer because it's Buzz Aldrin, and you can't just put Buzz Aldrin in additional voices.
Yeah.
Because he's Buzz fucking Aldrin. But, you know.
I couldn't tell who it was or, like, what time period it was. But he still, the kid says, oh, well, tell me another story about the Shepherd. Or he goes, oh, is that the only time the Shepherd saved the universe? No, son. Can I have another story? Sure. And then it fades out. So I think that they'll do either, like, prequel stories or try to fit it in before Mass Effect 1 or, you know, like, try to tell the tale of Shepherd.
So that the after credits of 3 kind of makes out that 1, 2, and 3 were all a story being told by his grandfather to his grandson?
It's a legend being told. Like, it's essentially what happened, but it's...
Well, yeah, but it's the whole 1, 2, and 3 at the end of 3 is essentially a recounting of the legend. Almost like in Dragon Age 2, how you have Varric and What's-Her-Face, and they're essentially telling the story of Dragon Age 2.
Yeah.
Oh, are we doing Dragon Age spoilers now too? Because,
well, that's not a spoiler. I mean, because that cuts in and out of the game.
I don't care. I'm not a Dragon Age guy.
But yeah, it's very similar to that. So I think that they're going to try to fit other autonomous stories of Shepherd in there at some point, and I don't really know if I care.
See, it's not that I don't know if I don't care, but I like the ending as it stands.
Well, let me ask you, because I don't know what the ending is.
There are 7 endings.
I heard 16, but they're like multiple endings.
I watched the videos for the other endings. There really isn't much difference.
Yeah, there are variations.
Is the Reaper threat like permanently taken care of?
Yes.
You either control the Reapers, destroy all synthetic life, including Edie and the Geth, or you synthesize a new DNA between humans and synthetics.
And making everything a transorganic being.
Okay, so regardless, the Reaper threat is done and taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would there even be left? What would even be left to do?
Nothing.
Nothing, because Shepard dies.
Shepard dies, the Citadel's destroyed, the mass relays are destroyed. If you do the destruction ending, most advanced technology is destroyed. And then the other ones, I haven't, I've done synthesis and destruction, I haven't done control.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it's like, basically, the whole point of the game is you find this big Prothean device, and if you attach it to the Citadel, it's supposed to destroy the Reapers, because the Citadel is the catalyst. And then when you hook it up, you find out the Citadel isn't, in fact, a catalyst. It's essentially just the last part of the Crucible, which allows it to broadcast out across the entire galaxy via the mass relay network. The catalyst is apparently this, I guess, a program, which is personified.
VI.
Yeah, a VI that is personified by that little kid that dies at the beginning. That is the thing that realizes that the whole created versus creator conflict and calls in the Reapers every 50,000 years because it's inevitable. I really wish that there was an option to tell that little kid, fuck you, the Quarians turned on the Geth's cycle and not the other way around. And I just busted my ass getting galactic peace and everyone together. Just blow up the fucking Reapers and let us all go home. You know, but you don't get that option. Yeah. Because
kind of unclear, too, what's going on with that, I thought.
Yeah, it really is. But with the synthesis ending, though, which appears to be the absolute best of them, at least FTL drives aren't destroyed, so everyone can leave the Sol system and get home, even if it's going to take a few years to cross the entire galaxy. As opposed to, like, destruction, you have now left, you know, millions of people in a solar system with no advanced technology, highly limited resources, disparate biologies. The Quarians, the Krogan, and the Turians are all gonna die, you know. So I've thought way too much on these.
Yeah, it's weird endings, and the part of my problem was with the synthesis ending. You make a new DNA, and obviously Joker gets hit by it, and he's able to walk off the ship, and he's all of a sudden part mechanical.
Well, everything has become a transorganic, you know, being. So Edie has become part biological, and
DNA.
So is that how Joker and Edie are able to
make babies
between the sheets?
Yeah. I just feel like DNA doesn't work that way. Like, these people are just immediately transformed.
Well, when you think about it, though, I mean, the Reapers have existed for, you know, we can vouch for what, at least 3 cycles?
Yeah.
You know, so at least 150,000 years, likely more in the neighborhood of like 250,000 years. So if they aren't advancing their technology in that time, then they're just stupid. It's kind of like one of my main problems with, like, Star Wars. It's like they invent hyperdrive and then nothing advances for thousands of years.
Yeah, I can see with that. But, I mean, every time they come in to end a cycle, they're harvesting technology and people. So yeah, I assume that they're either... Reapers. Yeah, I assume they're either advancing with each new Reaper they build or... they might have become stagnant because every 50,000 years they come in and stop development and restart it. They don't need to keep advancing because they don't allow civilization or other technology to reach their point.
But they might be shut down, you know? They might just be sitting out there...
Reserving their energy.
Yeah, and shut off. Which I think they actually mentioned that they're out there just kind of in stasis.
In the first one, they talk about they just go out into dark space and they hibernate until they're awakened.
My biggest problem with the ending was that they never really get a kind of ephemeral description of kind of why the Reapers are around. There's this little VI that calls them in, but you never understood, well, who made you? Where did this all come from? I didn't feel like it was explained enough.
Not at all. It wasn't at all. I remember I was playing one, and when you first talk to Sovereign on...
on Sovereign?
On Vermeier, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the dialogue options is who created you, and that doesn't really get answered.
Yeah. Right. Well, they probably don't, you know, don't remember. I mean, even, you know, let's assume that they are, you know, really, really great machines. I mean, still, over the course of hundreds of thousands of years, even their super hard drives have got to get clogged up with data and shit has to be deleted.
Yeah. Well, but you play that whole area in the Geth with Legion. You go through the Geth's entire collective memory, and they all stored their creation and the entire story of what happened. So I feel like they set it up to say, oh, hey, well, the Geth do this. I'm sure the Reapers can do this.
Yeah, but the Geth also only have, what, like a couple hundred years of collected memories?
That's true, but this VI obviously remembers every cycle because it calls the Reapers every cycle. So why didn't it say, oh, hey, I'm a VI that was created, you know, 500 million years ago, and organic life started to turn on me, and they're chaotic, so I'm going to just kill them every 50,000 years. Like, they didn't even give an explanation of the thing that obviously does know what the hell's happening.
I bet it was built by dinosaurs, just saying.
Yeah.
Episode of Voyager. Here, sweetie, cover your ears if you don't want to hear this part.
What?
I'm not going to tell you what it is about.
The spoilery stuff.
About the origin of the Reapers and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
all right. So that little kid is the VI that decides to call in the Reapers every 50,000 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no,
so
the VI displays itself to Shepard in the visage of that little kid.
Oh, right. Okay. Like, so it's not the kid. It just uses the image of the kid as... Yeah. All right.
It does the normal, like, VI, like, Cortana-y kind of look.
Okay. Now, is it a VI or is it an AI?
It's likely an AI.
Because if it's making the decisions to, okay, well, you know what, let's go ahead and bring in the Reapers and destroy civilization again, I think that's beyond what a VI is capable of.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah, unless it is, like, literally a really hard 50,000-year clock.
Yeah,
which,
if it's on
the timer. Yeah, it's totally a VI thing.
Yeah.
And it could explain why it's really shitty about explaining things, too.
Sorry, Lindsay heard all this, and she's just sitting here like, but...
I don't know. But, like, the one thing I do is...
So the little boy, in the very beginning,
he's just a little boy.
Okay.
He just
uses him as his image when
he presents
himself to Shepard.
In the dream.
How did that thing know to use that kid? That's what
Reapers
really bothered me.
The thing is obviously linked to the Reaper, so it has access to Reaper tech. There we go. Bam.
Good. It should have said something like that. Like, explained why it's the little boy's... There's just a lot of stuff that wasn't explained. And I can figure it out on my own, and I can make reasons why.
My theory is that the little boy is a Reaper artificial intelligence that is within the Citadel.
Right, of course, obviously. Because obviously something
Citadel's
is in there.
Just a happy, good time Reaper until 50,000 years shows up. And then it's all like, all right, time to turn you all into meat bags.
They've done such a good job with the story. I mean, over what I've played so far, at least. I had just the fact that the Citadel was, in fact, the mass relay. You know, I had no idea about that. And then they bring that. They did such a good job, I think, of really fleshing out the story and giving you little twists and little moments that... Yes, sweetie?
Yo, dog, I'm gonna let you finish.
Okay, yeah, well...
Okay, why is the little boy on fire?
It's dreams.
Feeling
guilty because he got burned alive by a giant space laser.
I hate that whole, like, let's have three or four parts where you just have to walk really slowly through absolutely nothing. And I hated that whole dream storyline.
All right, let me hold on. I've got headsets on, so she didn't hear a word of that. So Adam hates the slow walking through the dream sequences and allows stupid. And Tom says that the kid is on fire because, you know, it might be guilt on Shepard's part that the kid died flaming ball of destruction.
Okay, yeah, because I watched that and I'm like, okay, I have my daughter and she's going to be turning 9. I don't really want to see a kid catching on fire and I don't know why.
Well, then
light their farts on fire and then they kind of deserve it, don't they?
Well, you know, then that's just bad parenting.
Okay. There's the art book that came with the collector's edition actually explains that whole story.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't gone through the art book completely yet, so
I'm pulling mine out right now.
Here, go read the art book. It explains.
Yeah, it mentions
why the boy's on fire.
You know, Lindsay should just like put on another headset and join in on the podcast.
There's only one output, and I don't have a splitter.
Well, she should get her computer and do it.
I just feel like it's a useless pandering moment to like have this little kid in these dream sequences, and I didn't feel like it fit with the rest of the story and what you do in the other two games. It really just annoyed me, and it slowed down the game so much with those
sequences. I would tend to disagree with you on that, if only because it kind of felt to me that it was just, you know, I mean, when you think about it, Shepard's got to be having some crazy PTSD shit going on. I mean, look at what Shepard has done and the hard decisions. I mean, especially like in the wake of the Arrival. He's responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of essentially innocent people, even if they're Batarians. So they only count as half. But
then why don't we see him be going through dreams guilting about those Batarians. People? Why is it one little kid
because
that
that's...
you just have... I don't
because
like
it's
it
just,
because...
Look at the ending of Mass Effect 2, where it's like, when Morden says it best, he's like, can't think about saving the whole galaxy, focusing on one person. You know, it's like, focus, like, he's focusing on that. That kid is like the personification of his failure.
First of all, I still don't need to play dream sequences. Parts where they're just like, oh, hey, run through a forest for 3 minutes and do not, like, that just always annoys me in that kind of gameplay because it's really useless because there is no actual gameplay. And second of all, my Shepard wouldn't give a shit about one little kid. And personally, like, I'm not a parent, and I think that just like when everyone wants to be hardcore and they're like, they mention cancer or like, oh, kittens are the cutest thing, I'm going to say, like, there's certain poles you always use to personify hardcore or, you know, good nature. They always go for kids. And in these situations, it's always like a little kid to try to pull heartstrings. And I think it's a cheap ploy. And I don't need that. Shepard's obviously committed genocide if you played the Arrival DLC, almost. Like, you have done all this shit. There's enough for me to feel guilty over, choosing to let Caden die, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of other things would have made more sense to have me dreaming about than one little kid. And that's why I feel like they only put it in there as a cheap ploy to kind of pull the heartstrings because kids are cute and, you know, it's easy for parents and things like that to identify with kids. It just felt cheapened to me. I would have liked to have seen something more genuine to my Shepard's story.
Yeah, I can see that.
Quick question. I romanced Liara in the first game. Mm-hmm. And I obviously can't continue that in the second game.
You
but
can,
I can pick
romance
it.
Anyone.
Well, yeah, but there's an achievement for it.
Right.
Yeah.
You so can if, pick... I, if I turn around and romance someone else in the second game, can I go back to Liara in the third
yes.
game?
Yes. Yes. Or can. You can pick there's... someone entirely new.
Yeah, there's an option very early on in the third one where Liara is all like, so I know that you got close with so-and-so. Is there a way we can get back together or something? Essentially that, and then, you know, you can say, no, I'm a different person. I'm going to stick with whoever I romance into, or, yeah, totally, let's do it.
Okay, cool.
And if you say, hey, let's do it, and then you still go for somebody else, she gets very pissed.
Understandably so, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, because with my female Shepard, I romanced Liara in the first game because, you know, alien lesbian sex, how could I not? In the second one, I did Garrus. And then this one, obviously, I had both of them, and I ended up getting seduced by my specialist trainer, which was very strange. I was like, this is going into a weird place. And then Liara got very upset with me, and then Garrus and Tali ended up hooking up.
Oh, that was so cool when you walk in on them.
Yeah, so it's really fun how they do that. They give you a lot of options, or you can seduce the Jessica Chobot character.
You know what I was upset about?
What?
I played through one, and I was working on Ashley and Liara kind of at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got confronted by them in the comm room saying, you know, you have to choose. And I know that if you say, can't I have both, that bad things happen. But why do bad things have to happen there?
Because it's Mass Effect and not Dragon Age.
You know what? Shepard's such a badass, he could play for a threesome, I'm sure. I really loved Ashley this game too. I was not a huge fan of her in the first game, but
brief 5 minutes that she was in it.
But holy crap, her character—it was one of my favorites in three.
That really
surprised me.
Huh. I was kind of sad because my first save that I imported, I had romanced Jack, and Jack is not playable at all in three. So you're kind of limited to just like a couple sequences. And I felt really bad because at the end, as you're going into like the final confrontation, you get a chance to talk to all of your squad members and essentially say your goodbyes and stuff like that. And you call up Jack on like the VidCom and she's like, dude, you better survive because I totally need to get laid after this. And I was all like, well, damn, I'm dead. That sucks.
I really wish, like, when I did the trainer romance, I was like, okay, this is funny, whatever, I got my trophy, great. But I feel like if you seduce her or Diana Allers or any of the side characters, if you continue a romance with somebody that wasn't in the main game, you're really missing out, because the ending, I feel like what you would get out of the ending when you talk to your squad mates before you go on the big mission would be gut-wrenching. So
what you got with Liara was gut-wrenching.
Well, and Garrus too, if you go on this, if you're a female shepherd, well, you might do it with the male shepherd too, you go on the little kind of date with Garrus in the Presidium.
Oh yeah, and you're shooting bottles.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was just a really excellent
scene. Did
you miss
on purpose?
Yeah, of course.
Of course you have to, because it's like, especially like male shep, because like Garrus, you know, throughout all of the games has this really just this bravado about him, you know, this whole like, you know, I'm the ladies man, I'm the actual cool one between the two of us kind of thing. And it's just like, he knows that he isn't, and he knows that like Shep is really the cool guy, but Shep is, you know, awesome about it. And that's how I kind of went through it. And like, I'm really looking forward to going through that with my femme Shep, because I romance Garrus, because, you know, if you're going to romance an alien, go big or go home.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, when you have like the payoff of the romance in two with Femme Shep and Garrus, it's this really touching sequence.
Yeah.
You know, because you realize that, you know, Garrus really is just a bunch of bravado, and he has this really awesome, you know, sensitive side to him, which
you mean the part where he turns on the really bad techno-y music and starts trying to put the moves on Shepard?
Garrus?
Yeah.
I was waiting for him to start dancing to the music. I was waiting when I was watching her play for him to start strip teasing.
It is. It really is. And that's the great thing about it. You know, and it's kind of like, it's like the Jack romance in two as well is really touching.
I haven't done that one. I just feel like Garrus was the most sincere romantic option. And for the male shepherd, you didn't really have anyone like that. Maybe Jack, but you had to be Renegade, and I always play Paragon.
No, you can get it, Paragon.
Really?
Play Paragon. I can't play. I can't rationalize playing Renegade. I feel so bad.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll make occasional Renegade choices, but for the most part, I play Paragon.
Yeah. Exactly. It's kind of like in Knights of the Old Republic games, where it's like my first time I played through, I went straight dark side, and I was like, I don't really feel fulfilled by this game. And then I played light side, and I was like, huh. Actually, I had to think my way through problems and really play this game. You know, and it's just, that's how I feel like with Paragon over Renegade. So, and some of the Renegade decisions in this game are just flat out evil.
There's some tough choices, and they really, your galaxy preparedness is really limited if you go all Paragon. You can't satisfy everyone.
Yeah, you can satisfy enough people.
Well, yeah, but actually, not to get the 5,000 you need for some of the endings.
Oh yeah, you can.
I did every side quest, every mission, and still didn't only got 3,000 something at the end.
Let me see. I'm pulling up my Mass Effect right now, so let's check it out.
Enough to get to beat the game and have all your three options, but for some of the endings, you need 5,000 to 6,000, and you have to play multiplayer to get that.
That's just silliness.
Yeah, because your readiness is always 50%, which is the multiplier they use to figure out what your total assets and all that shit is. They say you don't need the multiplayer, and I guess you don't to get an ending, but to get every ending, you have to play multiplayer, which
optimum endings you don't need.
Right.
For
the best endings, I think you have to do multiplayer.
Yep.
Because,
and to get
like, Lindsay's done some of them. Well, now the trophies, they always have an either-or proviso in them.
Not for Master and Commander or Defender. You definitely need to do multiplayer.
Oh, okay.
Mm. And for 5,000 kills, you'd have to play through the game, new game plus, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I'm at, like, on my second playthrough, I'm at, like, just past 2,000 kills.
Yep.
Okay.
I was a little bit miffed about that, too. The multiplayer is good, though.
Yeah, it's fine. Still haven't had a chance to check that out yet.
I've been watching Lindsay play, and it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, right now, total military strength 5,641, and that's on my full Paragon Jack romance character that I beat the game with.
Interesting.
Yeah, but my effective military strength 2,820.
Yeah, that's the one that you need to get.
But it's still a full green bar.
It is, yeah, but you need to get more to get the Defender, and you have to have all those theaters of war in the multiplayer at 95 or 97 for the Defender trophy, and you have to go in with all of those up to get the Master and Commander trophy.
So you've done some of the multiplayer, right, Adam?
I've done a ton of it, yeah.
As you increase the readiness, does that mean that there are less Reaper forces on the galaxy map, thus making it easier? Oh, damn it. Because that would make so much of that game so much easier if, you know, there were less Reaper forces on the map, and then you could, like, you know, scan for planets without getting raped by Reapers. It's like bad tentacle porn.
Yeah, what's really fun is if you get out of the map, the way the Normandy is pointed at the circle is where you come in at, so you can find ways to dodge Reapers and pick up all the resources, and I kind of had fun with that for a while, but I did hate scanning this time. For some reason, I loved Mass Effect 2 scanning for planets. I would just do that for hours on end.
It was painfully addicting.
I am enjoying it so far.
It's so weird that you would just, it's so mind-numbing, but I scanned every fucking planet in every system.
Yeah.
And this one, it's just kind of like, I don't know, it doesn't work very well. It's kind of annoying to find everything. Most of what you find is like fuel, which you already have, and I was a little disappointed by that.
You know, it's just, it didn't make as much sense to go scanning for full-on resources this time.
True, yeah.
You know, especially seeing as, well, you have pretty much the entire galaxy already looking for resources to build the Crucible. The Normandy is as upgraded as you can possibly make it, given their current standards of technology and all that. I will say that the way that they kind of, like, explained away why the Normandy was all kind of gutted was actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like the Normandy in Mass Effect 3 is all kind of gutted and stuff because you're getting it as it's getting a retrofit for military grade technologies and not like all the Cerberus stuff. And it's funny because there's a couple times where they make fun of why Cerberus designed the ship the way they did. You know, it's like, why did they put the armory up on, you know, the command deck? You know?
Yeah. There's the problem that I had with Mass Effect 3. This is what's bugging me is that there's those little details are so brilliant, and they do so many little payments to fan service and these tiny, like, incredible paybacks for the options you've made, but it still feels like the whole story itself wasn't quite paid off and didn't quite do enough.
The ending felt like it honestly feels a little bit, as I'm looking back and I'm getting a chance to talk about it with people who've played the game, it feels like they almost rushed it.
Yeah, exactly. The ending doesn't feel...
It needed another 10-15 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't satisfying, especially the final cutscene, like what comes of your options, like what you do. There's no payoff, there's no explanation, there's no any sort of information on your crew, on your characters, on what the hell happens to the universe.
I want to see that all of my friends are okay.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's just like, you see that, what, like, four people come out of the Normandy? Okay, cut back to Earth. I want to see everyone who was there. You know, I want to see Rex. I want to see Rex, like, standing on a pile of a whole bunch of husks being like, I'm a badass, Shepard.
I want to see the Krogan planet being rebuilt or dying off. I want to see what happens with, you know, obviously the Denethor,
the Rax.
Yeah, the Korns and the Geth. I want to see that.
And like that's what I really want to see, because like that was the Korian and the Geth plotline has been one throughout the entire series that I have really just loved, because I think the Korians are just such a great, they're so well fleshed out, and it's one of the main reasons. Like one of my main drawbacks of Mass Effect 1 was I wanted to romance Tali so fucking bad.
Yep,
you know, because I loved her. She's so great. She's that girl next door kind of character. And then in 2, they gave you that option. I'm like, yes, this is so great. And I'm looking forward to in 3 getting, like, I'm trying to get through all the mission critical stuff to get to the Quarian Geth segment so I can re-meet up with her and all that. And Oh, man, she's so great.
Yeah, and you never see her face, though. That really bothered
you
me.
You do. Well, I think you have to romance her or have romanced her to be able to see it.
Okay, so you have to have romanced her in this game with. Okay, so I might have to go back with my male shepherd and romance Tally this time. Yeah. But it's.
There's a picture frame or something, because I know that there's that bit after you finish the whole bit on Rannoch where she takes off her mask.
Yeah, but you don't see it. I was so pissed. Yeah,
God, that was such a great moment. And I cried like a little baby when Legion died.
Yeah, there are some great moments, and that's what really made this game, where those little moments, the tying up of Tally's story, your conversations with people like Garrus and Liara at the end of the game, some of that was so powerful and so impressive.
Liara and Garrus, like, the great thing about them is, I'm kind of sad that Liara wasn't in two, is that they're kind of like Shepard's conscience.
Yeah.
You know, they are like his Jiminy Crickets, essentially. You know, they're there, they're always with him, they're always offering, you know, advice and trying to help him through problems, or her. You know, and it's just, to have them there, you know, even up until the end, is just so great. Like that final conversation with Garrus, you know, with like my male shep, where he's all like, you know, if this doesn't turn out so well, I'll be waiting for you at the bar wherever we end up, you know. And then Shepard's like last thing is he's like walking away, because Shepard kind of already knows that he or she has to die.
Mm-hmm. And why, you know, is that?
It's when you look at it like from, because I don't really count Mass Effect, the franchise, as a game. I count it more as an interactive piece of fiction.
Definitely.
And when you have an epic series or an epic story like this, the journey so changes the character that they either have to die or remove themselves from the world afterwards. Like, yeah, look at Lord of the Rings. You know, Bilbo and Frodo had to leave.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't fit for the mortal world anymore. And that's kind of like Shepard. You know, as much as I would have loved, you know, the Reapers to all be destroyed, Shepard and Tali get married and build a house on Rannoch and find a way to have half quarry and half human babies, you know, I knew that couldn't be.
Yeah.
But I just needed, as me, as Shepard, being essentially Shepard of the afterlife, to be able to look down and see that everything was going to be okay.
Yeah, and that was what really failed, was they did those little moments and those little tie-ups extraordinarily well.
But ultimately, they mean nothing.
Yeah. I think looking back on it, Mass Effect 2, I think, is the better game of the three.
I think it's the best.
It's because the concentration was always on your smaller storylines. It was about Thane. It was about Garrus. It was about Jack. And those were all so powerful and so well done and just incredible narratives. And then you go back to this overarching storyline, and it just doesn't feel powerful enough. It doesn't feel resonant enough. But
it all does until the end.
Yeah, but those small moments.
Yeah.
Those small moments do. The smaller things that they do and the character specific stuff that they take care of feels great and feels powerful, but you never quite hit it with the story as a whole. And that was kind of disappointing.
I think the main problem is that when these little small moments we're looking at were actually really quite large, you know, especially like the whole Tali Legion moment. I mean, it's like, that is huge. We just ended centuries of hostility between two people, and not just ended centuries of hostility, but essentially, and not only brokered a peace, but brokered like an allegiance.
Yeah.
You know, we brought these people in essentially what probably boils down to a week of quote-unquote real time, brought these two people back together, gave the Quarians back their home, and not just gave them back their home, but said, hey, these are your creations. And not only are they your creations, but they are also your best friends that you never knew you had.
Mm-hmm.
But we boiled it down to essentially, to highly personalize it, to the connection between Legion and Tali. Like that bit where Tali tells Legion that he has a soul.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, that, like, oh my God, that was powerful.
But that's what Mass Effect does well. It's those smaller narratives. And I feel like as the payoff of the big story, there are a couple failings. And Mass Effect 2 is better because it was so personal and you felt for all those people. So when you go to the suicide mission, you are extremely invested. In this one, I felt going into the end, I wasn't invested enough in the mission itself because I wasn't invested enough in the characters. You didn't have a side story with Garrus, really, that had a big payoff. You didn't have that side story with Liara. The only ones that were big payoffs were kind of Miranda when she shows up again and Tali, in my mind.
Yeah. But I think, ultimately, though, it's just... My thing, especially with what we're going on, is that the end did feel way too large in scope. I don't mind it being big, but then again, as like the example of the Gathkorian plotline, we need it to be boiled down to something very small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like essentially, we do need to see Rex and everybody, and then maybe even have like a couple years later thing, everybody meeting up at a bar on Earth in London. You know, yeah. And like everybody having a drink.
And I think that's what they were trying to do with the little kid. I just feel like that didn't resonate enough with me to feel like that distilled experience of the narrative.
Yeah.
Why they threw it in there, and it just felt kind of abrupt, tacked on, and like, oh shit, we need some kind of humanity to tie to Shepard. Let's have a little kid die. That didn't resonate with me, and that didn't stick with me.
Yeah, I will be honest though. I wonder what a transorganic Geth would be like.
Yeah, there's so many questions.
Would it have to eat? You know, or would like transorganic humans? Would they be able to derive energy, kind of like photosynthesis or stuff, from external sources? You know, I mean, there are so many questions that need answering. And I'll be honest, like the thing that really depresses me about this whole thing is that the Mass Effect universe is a universe that, like, I was talking about this with my wife earlier and some other friends, is that if like there was a magic device that I had and it said you could live in whatever fictional universe you want, Mass Effect is number one on that list because it feels so real and so lived in. And like, I want a Mass Effect MMO like there is no fucking tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I want to be able to log into a game and take my own little personal ship to the Citadel and go sit down in a bar with some Quarians and Turians and Krogans, and then they can have their whole dextro amino acid drinks, and I'll sit there with whatever the fuck humans drink in the future and just have fun. Like,
Can we ever get those answers, though? That's what I want to know. I think the ending came up where it's basically done because there are no more mass relays. They all got destroyed, so
but
travel...
Wanted to build new ones. It was something that was touched on in the first game. So it leads me to believe, I think they full on can, given all that information they were stealing from that Prothean beacon.
That's true. So, I mean, I'm wondering if future DLC will be playing in the future, but then wouldn't they have to make three different futures? And
I think really what they'll have to do is do something like the synthesis ending is canon.
Right, yeah. They have to pick one, which, again, that limits... you know, 2/3 of your audience's choices because it's no longer their Shepard and their choice.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the entire point of Mass Effect.
Yeah. Well, when you think about it, though, look, just going off of that whole Asari wanted to build, you know, mass relays. Well, now, thankfully, in the Salt System, you have a boatload of raw materials, all of the best and the brightest of the Asari, the human, the Turians, the Quarians, you know, all the best and the brightest of the galaxy. So if anyone's going to be able to build a new mass relay, it's them.
If they have the materials, because we don't know what the Protheans used.
Whoever built the mass relays, obviously it was Ezo heavy.
Yeah. I just don't know if like Earth's got it. There's a lot of directions they could go. I just think that giving you three options, which is great, you really take away the ability to make DLC or expand the story because... not everyone's going to want to play with this synthesis ending.
You know, honestly, here's what I think is going to happen. I know that there's a lot of people who are really pissed off about the ending of the game as it is. I was talking with Andy about it, thanks to the wonders of iMessage on iPhone. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a Fallout 3-style DLC that essentially changes the ending.
How so? I haven't played Fallout
3. The original ending of Fallout 3 was kind of lame. Actually, I liked it, but it was still kind of lame.
That was the end of it. If you beat the main quest line, the story was done. That was it.
The story was done. You didn't get to continue on, roaming around the wasteland or wherever, like in most Bethesda games. Story done, game done, bam, roll credits. So they added a DLC that essentially retconned the ending. Or not retconned it, but took away the option where you die. And then expanded it into the, what was it, the Brotherhood of Steel versus the Enclave conflict. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because when the game originally came out, man, people were pissed. Like, they were all over the forums and Twitter and Facebook. And, I mean, they didn't really have Facebook groups back then. So, you know, there was a whole lot of stuff going on, and people were really pissed off. And Bethesda was like, yep, yep, we understand, we understand. We're working it out in a major content patch later. And sure enough, they retconned it away in a DLC. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that that DLC wasn't planned, but it's one of those things where it's like a matter of like changing a couple variables in the original design of it. And when that DLC becomes unlocked, you could very easily turn that into, you know, something that was just like an offshoot of the story as opposed to being a new ending.
But the Fallout story wasn't, I mean, it was important, but that wasn't the basis of that game. The Bethesda storylines are never what people are playing it for. And what bothers me is Mass Effect is entirely about the story and the choices. That was their goal when they set out to make Mass Effect 1, and that's what they've stuck to. So to just come in and invalidate that for a lot of people,
maybe not necessarily
feels like
invalidate Mass Effect, but offer up a fourth option.
Because
there needs to be a point where, because in all honesty, like the fact that you can't sit down there and tell that little fucking kid that everything that he has said is completely wrong about this particular cycle, that you can't do that. It's just, it's a disservice because Shepard's not that dumb. Shepard has just spent the last 3 years of his or her life, you know, proving that particular cycle deserves to continue existing as they are, and that the Reapers are no longer, you know, pertinent. You know, that they aren't relevant. Like, there really should have been an option to say, fuck you, kid. You know, we deserve to continue fucking existing as we are with the world that we have, with our mass relays. Now destroy the fucking Reapers, destroy yourself, and get the fuck out of here. Like, we needed to have that ending. Even if Shepard dies at the end of it, I don't care. You know, Shepard has to sacrifice his or herself. But damn it, there deserved to be a fourth ending where the universe gets to continue on as it will.
Well, then yeah, the issue with DLC after that is Shepard dies, regardless. Right. So how are you going to have any kind of... what?
Yeah, that's my question.
Okay, no, she doesn't. You're right, sweetie, she doesn't. So, regardless, how are you going to have any kind of continuation past that point? Because Shepard is such an integral part of the story, and if people are playing for story and they can't play Shepard anymore, what's the point?
Yeah.
Unless you play as one of the other characters, like, oh, you can... Garrus is going to be your lead guy, but that still doesn't feel... I don't know. I don't think it would be as satisfying. They need to have a definitive ending and say, okay, this is the universe as it is. We're done. Any DLC, I feel, will cheapen it even more.
I don't think it needs any DLC. It finished their project.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm not
more
happy.
More DLC would be kind of a more corporate issue rather than a BioWare issue.
That's what I'm afraid of happening, is that they're going to say, well, we need DLC, so you need to revamp the ending and make it so we can get another Shepard story. We can do something here. That's what I'm afraid is going to happen. And I think that it will feel cheap.
Yeah. Well, either way, though, as it stands right now, I'd still give this game like a solid 90, 95.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's not perfect. In fact, it's very far from it. But it's still really fucking good.
My problems with it, like the PS3 version especially, Jesus, the graphical errors, good Christ. It's
because
nobody
knows how to work with the damn PS3. And how far into this console cycle are we? That's terrible.
I agree. People need to get their shit together.
Trust it, though, this is BioWare's first real attempt at making a game on the PS3.
Well, Mass Effect 2 was fantastic. I played through that on PS3 a number of times, and there's not a discernible difference between the 360 version, which I also played a couple times, and the PS3 version, which is why I was so shocked. At every time you go to a planet to land or search, it has to pop everything in. Most cutscenes start with absolutely no textures whatsoever, and they just end up, like, the pop-in is so bad through the whole game.
Well, that's just, I mean, that's an Unreal issue. I mean, that's been plaguing that engine forever. And it doesn't help either that something I was talking about with Chris last night is that they use the Dead Space animation engine. Because, if you look at the way, Shepard and everybody moves, especially in how they hold weapons, it's just how Isaac Clarke moves. What's his name? Or is it, Asimov? Or what's that guy's name in that game? But,
yeah.
I love Isaac. Dead Space.
Well, I was... And, two, I was surprised at just how special, I guess, everyone looked while they were moving. You've got your head lolled off to the side, you've got your shoulders tilted a little, you've got your arms pumping, and it looked like they had been dropped on their heads repeatedly as children and set free to save the galaxy, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous.
But even those issues, with what I saw as my problems and some of the small gameplay issues, the making you walk slowly through all these passages and points, really slowed stuff down. I couldn't even be that pissed because the rest of the packaging and the story was so addicting and so satisfying.
I don't care that they run retardedly. No offense.
Yeah, exactly. The errors that would normally kind of hurt a game for me if I was reviewing it or even just discussing it really didn't matter here.
Yeah.
It just didn't. They could be totally forgiven. So, points on that anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... And I mean, it really, that particular issue really only affected casual walking. Once you got into combat mode, animations were sharp and just amazing. They have one of the best cover mechanics when they moved from 1 to 2. I mean, it's fluid. It works. I just wish that there was it was a little easier to just instantly jump over stuff. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, they fix that with 3, where you can for PC it's spacebar is your magic button for everything, so you can double tap that so you don't have to go into cover first and then go over it.
I feel the added platforming they put in 3, jumping over things and climbing, it kind of felt a little bizarre. I didn't quite understand why they did it like they did, but it still worked. I mean, it's something that even though it bugged me occasionally, I could get over it. And again, that's just speaks so much to how good the game is and how good the story is, even though we're complaining about it, that it completely it makes an apology for all of the bullshit that there really is in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we have complaints about it. And well, you have complaints about it. I haven't played 3 enough to complain about it or at all. But in comparison to the overall quality of it, they're nothing.
No, mm-hmm.
I think that's where it comes in.
It's an amazing game. It's a great experience. I mean, it's just if you are a Mass Effect fan, you owe it to yourself to play 3. If you are a fan of games, you should play 3 up until about the last hour of it. But because
I wonder how someone coming in that's never played it before would take it. I mean, I think adding in the multiplayer and you could tell from all the corporate EA stuff that we were seeing before release, they wanted it to be open to new players. I don't think it is at all. I think that you have to have played 2 at least. You had to have played 2. There's no way somebody new could come into Mass Effect 3 and get any kind of real enjoyment out of it.
Well, Lindsay started with a demo before she played 2 and didn't have too easy of a time with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, she played through all of 2, and then going into 3, she was getting to those levels from the demo in the game.
Yeah.
And actually knowing how to play it now, and actually knowing how all the mechanics worked, she had a much easier time with it.
Yeah.
It felt like a completely different game at that point, for her at least.
I just wonder how the story would pay off. Is the gameplay and those quirks that kind of bothered me, but I was able to forgive because obviously I love Mass Effect, if you're a brand new gamer and you're coming in and you want to play it like it's a Gears of War, would it work? Would it bring in a new audience? Will somebody play this game and be like, oh, this is amazing, I'm going to go back and play number two? I don't know if it's that effective.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're going to get that, because people who play Gears of War will play Gears of War, and you know, they will play games that look like Gears of War. They aren't going to play a like legitimately good space opera. You know, I mean, yeah. You know, Mass Effect now has what, like 6-7 years of hype building it up as this big, you know, essentially Star Trek alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's really hard to get over that. You know, I mean, it's just you can't really like get over that stereotype with one iteration of the game.
Yeah.
Well, and you'd be doing yourself a disservice by not playing through all of it. Like, I mean, I'm really glad that I decided to go back and start with one instead of just starting with two.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting to make all, because the whole thing, like you were saying, the project was your decisions will matter all the way through, and I like having context around those decisions. Like, I could have started two, and I could have just made my decisions at the beginning and gone forward, and but I wouldn't have had the same context and the same emotional impact to those decisions and the consequences of those decisions as I do now by having played the first one.
I wonder how it is for people on PS3 starting at number two.
Well, they had the whole that Mass Effect Origin DLC, it was motion comic-y thing. At least they got to make the decisions.
I played it, obviously, and I played one before, and it was cool to make the decisions, but I don't feel like it really captured anything. But coming in as a new player, I honestly don't think that comic made up for not being able to play number one, because there's so much to the first game. There's so many details and so much information. I feel bad for people on the PS3 never being able to play number one.
Yeah.
Really, that's the bottom line. I just feel guilty for them, and I am sorry that they don't get to experience it.
Yeah. Man, I really kind of want to play Mass Effect 2 again.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and play them all, yeah.
Yeah, I have I started a FemShep Mass Effect 1 playthrough because I played the first one on Xbox, and like I remember when that game first got announced at E3 all those years ago, and I was like, oh my god, that game is absolutely beautiful. This is going to be like the greatest thing ever. You know, and sure enough, it was. Like, I didn't have like Adam's problem with it. It's like I sat down to play that game and I was instantly enthralled. I was sold. You know, it's just like, I was like, yeah, the controls are a little quirky and things don't quite work right. And I really hated the inventory in one terribly. Like, it just, I didn't like the way it looked. I didn't like the way it worked. I thought it was way too convoluted and just, you know, but I didn't care. Because, I mean, the story was there. The characters were there. It was just, it was amazing. Oh, and I could get with a blue chick. Yeah. And then 2 came out, and 2 just looked so much better than 1. And I switched over to PC, and thankfully there was a website where you could download Mass Effect 1 saves that other people had done. So I had downloaded saves that were essentially what I had done in the game.
Mm.
You know, and, so I was able to pretty much continue on. And the first time I played through, I just kind of like went through, or I didn't even download any of those saves. I just went straight in. And I was like, man, this universe sucks. They made all the decisions wrong. Rex is dead. Udina is counselor. You know, like, what the hell's wrong with this universe?
Yeah.
But I still went, oh, and then I lost like everyone in the suicide mission. And, you know, it's just like, that's the thing with like Mass Effect, is you don't really realize how attached you are to these characters until you lose one.
Oh yeah. I know what happens to a lot of the characters, and I know how to avoid these things happening. Morden, for example, I know how to avoid Morden dying.
In three. Really?
Yeah.
Well, apparently if you don't do the Kirahin, thing in on Vermeier in one.
No, that's with Thane.
Oh, that's for Thane.
Yeah, that's for Thane. With Morden, if you don't
do his loyalty quest in two.
Yeah, if you don't do his loyalty quest, and if you let Rex live, and Rex is in charge of the Erdnot, that will you'll be able to save him.
Okay.
But
so knowing that, I'm still going to go ahead and do Morden's loyalty quest in two because that's the way I play it, and I like him, and I'd want to do his loyalty quest, and I can't snub him to save him later on because my shepherd doesn't know that by doing that, I'll be able to save Morden. So knowing that, I get to play through the rest of 2 and all of 3 waiting for Morden to die while singing Pirates of Penzance, the Solarian version.
Was
Lindsay saying you could save Thane here? Because that would be...
How, you were able to save Thane, you said?
Dude, you know
what?
Something about Caden would take...
No, you're getting it all mixed up. With the part with Udina, regardless whoever you have, Ashley or Caden, if you don't do the renegade part where you shoot Caden, it will be whoever you saved, either Ashley or them. They'll be the one to go ahead and shoot it. But with Thane, if you save that one if you save that one person in Vermeer, they will be the one who steps in. They'll be the one who steps in and saves What's-Her-Face, and they're going to be the one who goes and gets stabbed. But in order to do that, you can't talk to Thane at all on the Citadel beforehand, and then I think he just ends up dying anyways from the disease that he has.
That's just ridiculous and convoluted, and while I'm sad Thane died, at least he went like a badass.
Dude,
that's what I say.
Yeah,
that's what I say.
Because I romance Thane. Like, I wept.
Yeah.
When Thane died, when Morden died, both times
I wept.
There was box of tissue. There was heaving. There was crying.
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it was funny for me.
Much as I'd want Morden, because you can save him, and then he'll get put in, and then you'll get like the bonus to your fleet and everything like that with Morden. You don't get him as a proper character. He isn't going to be on your ship or anything, and you have to kill Rex.
Yeah, and I don't want to kill Rex either.
No.
Because Rex is awesome.
He is.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is, Morden died really well, also doing something.
Oh, he did. Everyone
that he needed to do. So
everyone who dies really well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and then Samara almost dies too.
Mm.
I wonder how that plays out with Morinth, though. But you know, Samara, because like there's a mission with Samara where the first time you run into Banshees, because the Reapers are turning all the Ardat Yakshi into Banshees, and Samara of course shows up because it's her job to kill them, because she's awesome like that. And at the end of it, all that's left is her daughter, but the monastery where the Ardat Yakshi are supposed to be sequestered is destroyed. So she either has to kill her daughter, she has to kill her daughter to uphold the Justicar Code. So she decides that she's going to kill herself instead. And you have a Paragon option to stop her before she shoots herself and convince her that her daughter will stay there and rebuild the monastery on her own.
Hmm.
And it's just like, you know, I saw that Paragon thing come up and saw the gun pointed at Samara's head, and I was like instantly right-clicking because I like Samara.
Hmm.
You know, she's a great character. You haven't met her yet.
Not yet. I saw what happened, and Lindsay was telling me about her daughters, and then there was the quest to go after one of them. So I know what happens with her.
Yeah, it's her loyalty mission. So, yeah.
There's just so much to it. I need to play the game like 15 or 20 times just to catch up on all the stories and all the options.
Exactly. That, I mean, it's just,
So I was going to say, I started over immediately after finishing the game because I'm like, I don't feel satisfied. Like, there's more I want to see. I didn't play it correctly. I wanted to see this vein and this vein, and I couldn't put it down, and now I want to go back through all the other games and make new choices to see what happens.
Yeah, like, I kind of want to go through and actually do a Renegade playthrough, because I've never done that, because I just, like, I identify too much with that universe to be anything other than myself.
Right.
You know, so it's like, if I'm offered, like, the option of, saving a planet or blowing up a planet, I'm going to save the fucking planet, because all life is important.
Right.
You know? Even my cats that are presently fighting behind me.
I can hear them.
but it's just, you know, and that's why I went with, like, the synthesis ending at the end. It's just like, because I was like, well, I really want the Reapers gone, but I'm not going to sacrifice the Geth and Edie to get rid of the Reapers.
Right.
because the Geth are great, and I've always loved them, and especially once I found out that the evil ones in one were just a very small portion of the Geth, you know, and I was just like, come on, I mean, they're awesome.
Well, and then how could you do that to Joker?
Exactly. You can't do that to Joker, because Joker's like your best friend.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's been there since the beginning, you know, I mean, the only reason he joined up essentially with Cerberus was to chill with Shepard again. So
yeah, there's so much depth to the story and breadth to it, and that's why I feel cheated at the end that we don't get everything wrapped up. You get an ending to Shepard and you get a goodbye to Shepard, but you don't get to see any of these characters, and honestly I care more about your squad mates than I do about Shepard, really.
Exactly. And I mean, that's the greatness of this game, is it gets you to not care about yourself.
Yeah,
it gets you to care about these fictional, entirely fictional people more than yourself.
I totally cared about myself. I mean, more than, like, everything I did, all my decisions from Shepard, I cared about because they affected my squad mates and how they changed the universe. So I really want more of an ending to them, not necessarily to Shepard. And I think that maybe BioWare didn't understand that. I find it hard to believe that maybe they really thought people cared more about Shepard's story than everyone else's, but I need some closure
here. Like, true. We might be the outliers. We might be the ones who aren't so self-involved about this. You know, I mean, it's just like going off of that again, is the first time I played through Mass Effect 2, in the suicide mission, you know, the bit where you have the biotic make the bubble so the little swarms don't get you? Mm-hmm. I lost Morden at that point. And, like, there's, like, four options where you can have. And, like, every time I'm picking, no, we're going back for him. You know, because, like, Morden Solas is, like, one of the coolest characters that they ever put into this game. You know, aside from, like, I love the Solarians. I think they're great. Like, when you first meet up with Captain Kirahi and one with Solarian special tasks, and I was just like...
Hold the line.
Exactly. I'm just like, how can you not, like, love that guy? And then you get a Solarian on your crew, and he's like Kirahi, but, like, 10 times cooler.
And 10 times as hyper.
Exactly.
I love listening to Morden talk. And then when you talk to him and you first... kind of both figure out that you both have had interaction with Kirahi before, and then he kind of like goes, yeah, I loved his speeches, hold the line. Well, I giggled at that because I had just finished playing one and I had finished listening to that speech, you know, mm-hmm. 10-15 hours prior to that, and I'm like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And it's just the Solarians are just so great. I mean, especially, like, going through, there's a mission in 3, it's part of the demo, where you're saving the female Krogan. Like, mm-hmm. you're looking at that, and, like, they're abducting these unuplifted races and experimenting on them, and I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, oh my god, that just makes all of those stories of rednecks who got captured by flying saucers and these these greys and carried to someplace else and experimented on, that basically just said that that really happened.
And it was the Solarians.
It was the fucking Solarians. And there's a great bit where a Yogg breaks out and, like, busts up some Cerberus people. And Shepard goes, if you've done the Lair of the Shadow Broker DLC, Shepard goes, well, there goes the next Shadow Broker. And I took Liara and Garrus on that mission. And Garrus goes, I think he was yelling to Sony, to Sony, to Sony. And then Liara's just like, shut up. It's just a great, hilarious moment, and I just busted up, and I'm kind of glad that Misty wasn't home for it, because she would have been like, why are you laughing at fictional people?
Well, no, it's because a friend of mine told me about what happens with the Prothean DLC, mm-hmm. Because I asked about it, and Lindsay had
it's
already
pretty good, actually.
Thing. Well, and I loved when you're having that initial conversation, I guess, and you're wrapping it up, and Javik is kind of talking about how he's surprised that the Asari and the humans and the Turians have all kind of become the technological races. And then you mentioned the Solarians. And then he says, oh, the lizards evolved.
And then Liara is there with her, she goes, actually, they're amphibians.
Yeah, and then he'll respond, they ate flies?
They ate flies.
He's so great. And then, like, there's one point later in the game where he's like, hey, take me to the Presidium, because, or not the Presidium, the Citadel, because when he went into stasis, the Citadel had fallen centuries before. And he's standing up there in, like, the embassy's area of the Presidium, and, like, everyone's like, oh, my God, are you a Prothean? And, like, a Hanar comes up, and he's like, I remember when you were a tadpole. Oh. And it's just hilarious. Like, it's just, like, he's such a cool character. I love that man out of time quality to him. He's almost like Captain America, except a dick. Because he's really, like, this, like, militaristic, imperialist dick.
Yeah, I've seen some of the conversations that she's had with him.
But he's so cool. And, like, I really cared about him, because, like, one of the last conversations you have with him, it's like, Javik, what are you going to do when this is all done? And he's like, I'm going to go back to this big old battlefield where I lost a whole bunch of friends and make sure that they're all, like, essentially properly buried, and then I'm going to join them. You know, and it's just, like, he has this wonderful, like, samurai-type quality to him, which gets explained a bit in the art book, because they wanted to give him that look and that feel.
Yeah.
You know, and I wanted to see that. I wanted to see him and his own little ship. And even if it was, you know, bittersweet, I kind of wanted to see him, you know, do the whole seppuku thing and join his friends.
So, how hard would it have been to have all those sequences with like, you know, a beautiful score, which Mass Effect obviously has, and tie up the game that way?
Honestly, you know what I think really happened? I think that they got pressured by EA to get the game out the door.
Well, then you know what they could do? They could release in a month or so. They could spend a little bit of time, put together, not as DLC maybe, or maybe as just a free little update.
A patch.
Put together a patch, yeah, that has a cutscene in it, or a handful of cutscenes, and just explain the rest of it away.
Yeah, and if you already have the achievement for getting it, it'll, like, pop up on, like, that little galaxy readiness thing and be like, you've already beaten the game, we just put this out for you, click to play.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot that needs to be done, or, you know, maybe have the DLC pack be side missions where you carry Garrus through Paladin and the moon you were on, and you know, have just one or two missions for each character to go about continuing their life.
Yeah.
And see how they honor Shepard. That could be decent, I guess. I mean, that would make me somewhat happy.
Yeah, you play as the Shepard VI. And you run into them at the Purgatory Bar on the Citadel. Or no, the Citadel's destroyed. You run into them somewhere, you know, and it's just like, hi, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite bar in London, you know, and all of them are like, wow, you do look like him, but he sounds way less annoying in real life.
You know, I just started going through and giving my endorsement to anyone that would take it for all the discounts.
Oh, it's hilarious. Oh, man. But no, it's just, it needed a more personal touch to the ending. And it would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Like, if it had a personal touch to the ending, and I'm saying this without having touched the multiplayer at all, I would have no problem giving this game a perfect score. None.
Yeah.
My cat disagrees.
I don't know if it'd be perfect for someone coming into the series fresh, judging it just on like a game on its own, but as a conclusion to the trilogy, I think the Mass Effect series would probably deserve a near perfect score. I think it's the most complete narrative we've ever seen in games and probably ever will.
It's definitely more complete than, you know, Halo or Gears or...
Yeah, they set out to make a product where your choices matter and carry things through to the end, and they really did it.
I mean, it's just I've been wanting to write something like this for the site for a while, but I just can't organize my thoughts correctly enough. But Mass Effect to me is the defining franchise of this hardware generation. I mean, it's just, they have continually pushed the boundaries of graphics and gameplay and story and narrative design, and they have continued to just evolve and become better. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it started when the Xbox was still young, and it ends when the Xbox and PS3 are old. I mean, it's just, it has bookended this generation, you know? So it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And I know that they've wanted to do a movie of this forever, and I hope that they don't. because
it's a lot of content to fit in.
They can't fit 120 hours of awesome into 8 hours of movie.
Yeah, I would say my only complaint with the Mass Effect series is, Chris, I feel bad for you because you're playing on Xbox. The disc switching in the third game is pretty awful.
I've seen Lindsay going through it, and it'll say at these really random times, you know, back to disc one, back to disc two. And it makes me wonder why they didn't just put the first half of the content on disc one and the second half of the content, like some of the later level pieces on disc two. I don't know if they've done that, and it's bizarre. Just she's running into weird situations, but I've seen it as a big complaint that people are having a disc switch a lot.
I think disc switching is stupid. Like, especially given how large... I mean, you can't assume that people have an Xbox 360 hard drive, sadly. But given how prevalent 360 hard drives pretty much are... I just wish that, especially in that situation, you should be able to, like, fully install the damn game.
Yeah, that was the one advantage of playing on the PS3. But I'm curious to see if they, you know, next generation, if they bundle these as sort of classics and put DLC on there and try to continue the series so people remember it.
Yeah, I hope that they do. Like, I would love to have, like, a classic trilogy purchase. You know, like, especially if they could find a way to put Mass Effect 1 with an updated version of all the graphics and textures, because going back to that, even after Mass Effect 2, is almost painful to look
at. They need to pull the first Mass Effect from Microsoft. EA's got the power to do it, and I don't know why Microsoft needs it, because they're sure as hell not doing anything with it. They really need to just sell the licensing to EA for a few million dollars and let it go.
Well, I mean, as far as their desire for keeping it, I think it's a pretty big holdout to keep people interested in playing the series on 360 instead of PS3, because you can't play the first one unless you do that, and then you can't transfer your played character unless you start it on the first one. Well, I mean, you can go from 2 to 3, but you can't bring a character all the way through from start to finish unless you do it on the 360, and that's still, I think, a big advantage for them.
Yeah, I love this franchise, and I wish that there was some way for it to fluidly continue on and make sense. You know, like, even if it's not following Shepard, because you know what, I'm fine not following Shepard moving forward if they do move forward with it, but I just don't want them to move backward.
Well, see, I can't see them moving forward with it either, because they've already completed, like, the biggest story that would ever really affect the universe. You know, galactic destruction is solved.
Yeah.
How do you follow that up, you know?
It'd all be cleanup. Yeah, it's a weird place they're in, and I'm sure EA is going to make them do more DLC, but we really just need a wrap-up of the characters, and I don't ever need a prequel. I don't really need anything else. I'd be happy just to see what happens to Garrus and Jack and Leon, Liara.
Well, they need to treat it like the British treat their television series. They don't go 20 seasons or 10 seasons.
They go until it's done.
They go until it's done, and then they stop and they leave it the fuck alone.
Unless it's Doctor Who.
Yeah, but the good thing with Doctor Who is that they've already built in a mechanism that it makes sense for it to continue on new people.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't work for, like, say, The Office or Being Human or, you know, any other British show except for Top Gear, because goddamn, that show is great.
Right. But, I mean, then with Top Gear, you always have new vehicles coming out, so it always makes sense to keep... I mean, I see that more of, like, a news...
Yeah, what are they going to do when, like, Clarkson, May, and Hammond become too old?
Then I think they need to stop. Unless they start, I don't know, maybe putting some new people in now.
Yeah.
And kind of making a very long-term transition.
Yeah, I'd be cool with that, too. Because that show's so great.
We could probably do a British TV podcast, too. Good Lord.
Yeah, we could.
All I can talk is Doctor Who and Top Gear, just saying. But trust that that's all you need to talk about.
True.
Although I've heard very good things about the BBC's Being Human.
That's really great too. Yeah, definitely. There's
Sherlock. Sherlock is fantastic.
Oh God, yes it is. Yeah.
I have a guilty pleasure for the show Primeval because anything involving dinosaurs.
Yep. Yeah.
Even though it kind of got really bad when Jason Fleming joined the show.
Maybe you just hit on something. We could have a Mass Effect DLC where we see the dinosaurs building the mass relays. Go back to your original idea.
Done. Velociraptor, Raptor Jesus builds the mass relays and is all like, I really like prawns and squid, so I'm going to put them together in these giant 2-kilometer-long artificially intelligent creations.
Yeah.
Done. I'm in. Everything ties back to Earth. That's pretty much how it's got to be. you know, fucking Raptor Jesus.
I'm in.
So there you go, BioWare. If you're listening, I will accept a cash payment for that DLC idea.
Oh man,
I would like $5,000.
I'm sure. In a couple months, we'll hear about what they're going to do to keep cashing in on this franchise.
I bet you it's going to be mostly multiplayer DLC. I bet you they'll add some new maps, some new things, maybe some new enemy types.
I don't know if I'd keep playing the multiplayer if it wasn't for the galactic readiness, though.
Yeah.
And to get the couple trophies I need out of it, I think I'm done. It isn't compelling to me like Halo is, or I don't know. I don't know how long the multiplayer base is going to last, because I think most of us who are going to play Mass Effect are not interested in the multiplayer, and I don't know how long we're going to keep playing it.
Yeah. We'll find out.
Well, anything else?
No?
If we got started on something else right now, we'd go on for another hour.
Okay. Well, this has been episode 20 of Marooners Talk. You can find us at maroonersrock.com, facebook.com/maroonersrock, and on Twitter at @marooners_rock. We are on iTunes, and we are not yet on Zune because Zune has a really ridiculous system for putting content up. So sorry for our one or two Zune listeners, but you're just going to have to stick to the RSS feed.
Spoilers are over now.
Yeah, spoilers are done. So
so you can listen. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, so thanks for listening. And I guess we'll see you guys next week.
Sounds good.
Potentially. We still have to have that damn Star Wars The Old Republic one.
We do. I may be getting a new laptop from work while I'm on vacation, and if they give me my home setup the way I'm really angling for, with my dual monitors and my dock and everything, I'll finally be able to actually play the damn thing. So.
Yeah. Oh, Adam, are you playing Star Wars or no?
What?
Not yet, but it's on the docket.
Well, if you do, and anyone listening, every Monday night I play with a couple friends of mine on the server, Cathhound, Sisside, and we have a guild called Marooners Rock. So
that's right. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, so I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do for those damn articles I told you about. But but yeah, so we play. It's me and a couple friends of mine from college, and we play every Monday night. Guild is retarded small. Like we have 4 people in it.
Well, that isn't necessarily a bad thing.
It's not. Yeah. And so it's just feel free to come play with us if you want. We're cis side. We're only in our mid-20s so far because we really only get together to play every Monday night. We'll put up some info for that at some point when we have our Old Republic podcast, I guess.
Definitely.
Excellent.
So. Cool. Have a great week.
Yeah, you all too,
man. See you guys later.